So I think there's very few authors that are really recognisable by the... Many are recognisable by the prose and the way they write and, of course, the books they write. Very few are recognisable, I think, by the voice, as my guest, Jilly Cooper, is. One of the most recognisable voices, I think, in sort of broadcasting, but also so recognisable as a face. I walk out of Cheltenham. I was doing The Sound of Music in Cheltenham, and I walk out and we're doing autographs, and there, standing, quite misty-eyed, was one of the most recognisable and most popular authors this country has ever produced, Jilly Cooper.
Oh.
Well, you were. And I was like, what are you doing here?
But I mean, I'd come to say you how wonderful you were, and there you were.
Well, it was... You were a little bit misty-eyed, but I heard you on Desert Island Discs a few weeks ago, and there one of your choices was one of the songs that I sing in the show with Maria, Something Good.
Absolutely, it was. It's a lovely song, isn't it?
It is. So Sound of Music has always sort of sat by you.
Well, I tell you what is interesting. Also, I have to say, I want to say to everybody who's listening now that Andrew is absolutely awesome. I mean, he's not only brilliant acting and extraordinarily handsome and very moving, but also a stunning voice. Did you always have a stunning voice?
You can listen. You can come on this show any time you want.
But have you?
I've always sang. I wanted to do a musical because I've always sang, but I'd never done a big musical, and I'd always wanted to do The Sound of Music. Generally, I know you're supposed to say that when you do press, but I really had, and it was such a warm, wonderful production, and you know, we're doing it. This week we're in London. It carries on, and every single place we go, people are loving it.
You're going to London, are you?
We're playing Dartford. We start at Dartford tomorrow, and then we've got about 4 or 5 weeks. But we're going to finish in Wimbledon, which is wonderful.
I tell you what did interest me too, because you know, when I'd seen it as a film years ago and seen it here, and suddenly listening there in the theatre. I mean, I was with grandchildren, 4-year-olds, right up to sort of geriatric me, and everybody was transfixed with interest. But it's such a serious story, isn't it? I mean, it's not just a lovely musical, a love story. I mean, it is a serious story.
It's a musical full of hope and love, and I think, you know, I think the world has gone a bit mad. Mm-hmm. I think there is danger in the world. There is fear in the world, and I still think there's, you know, we're going to be fine. I always believe that, but there's confusion, and I think for 3 hours a night, people can sit there and listen to The Sound of Music, and it's full of hope. But as you say, it's based on a true story that
the
bad guys.
Dark story, isn't it?
Yeah, well, stories are obviously a huge part of your life, and we're going to come to that. But I touched on that you were a bit misty-eyed when we met backstage after the show, because it's a very moving show. And I said, good, I'm glad you're crying. I can get you back now, because a few years ago I was reading a book often on the train, and I had to stop reading it on the train because I was blubbing my heart out. And I make no qualms about this. It's a book I buy people all the time now. It's called Animals in War. It tells the story of our brave, you know, companions from, well, let's face it, doves to cart horses. And I just think it is the most moving of books. And many people might not be aware of it, but more so, I think some people might not be aware of your involvement in what is one of the most important monuments in London, which is the Animals in War monument. David Backhouse's beautiful and hugely moving monument. Just tell us how all that started.
Well, what happened was that my husband was a publisher of military history, and he did luck with the Imperial War Museum, who became friends of mine, and they asked me in 1982, would I write a book about all the animals in war? And I thought, oh, whoops, tra-la, what fun. I thought of, you know, sort of dogs in sailor hats looking out of portholes, you know, bulldogs. I thought it'd be a jolly thing. And I had absolutely no idea. I mean, I had no idea until I started writing it that 8 million horses died in the First World War. 8 million. And they died so much, also because they were killed and shot, but also they died because they were from disease and from sort of starvation, and because the soldiers didn't look after them. And the heartbreaking thing, Andrew, was that they got so hungry they ate their rugs and choked on the buckles, and also they had to give them gas masks, and they held this gas masks on with safety pins. I mean, just through their nostrils. I mean, it was in the Burma War. So I know it's awful. 4,000 mules were sent over there to Burma to help get rid of the Allies out there. But when they got out there, the mules made too much noise, and so they all had their vocal cords cut, and they carried on. You know, they were so brave, all these animals. They just, these awful things happened to them. They just carried on.
So you were approached to write the book Animals in War.
I had no idea. I just moved to the country the same weekend as I started writing the book. I just cried for 6 months. It is heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's very important. And also, we're going to obviously talk about your other work in a minute, but I truly, when people go to London, I say, these are the things that you need to see. Go to this show, go to this museum. I adore Somerset House, and I always urge them to go down and see this monument. I mean, I would say I'm a famous animal lover. I'm not as famous an animal lover as you, but we are a nation of animal lovers, and I think that it's one of the, I wouldn't say it's a secret of London. On the monument, it says, I'm just going to read this. This monument is dedicated to all the animals that served and died alongside British and Allied forces in wars and campaigns throughout time. And then the smaller inscription simply reads, they had no choice.
Oh, that was Leo thought that. My husband thought that. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely inscription, isn't it? They had no choice.
Yeah.
But I have to. Also, the good thing the animals did, too, was that they, as well as being sort of very, very brave, they were also mascots. They cheered the soldiers up. And I love this one. So there was the Royal Inn in Skillings had a pig mascot called Muriel. It was very religious. And evidently, Muriel had to be tied up on Sundays to prevent her joining both Church of England and Roman Catholic parades. Sometimes she broke loose and made for the church, and during a dull sermon, the men would be thrown into fits of laughter, hearing Muriel's grunting approach. Next moment, 400 pounds of pig would be inside, showing her delight at being among friends by the most reverberating grunts and squeals.
I wish Muriel was around now. She could run for Parliament, I think.
She'd been brilliant. We needed her in Parliament. But anyway, she was too big to dislodge, so a tin plate had to be beaten with a spoon outside. And assuming dinner was ready, Muriel would waddle quickly out of the church. And the mascots did cheer them up. So they did a good thing, being brave and fighting, but they also did cheer people up.
So the book, I will just want to finish this because I'm so passionate about that memorial and that book. I really am.
And so they said,
let's. Was it your idea? Was that?
We all got together. 82, I wrote the book. 83, and then some friends, sort of Andrew Barker Bowles and Joanna Lumley and Kate Adey, and that's up the head of the RSPCA. Pet plan all came, and we all got together and said we must, because there wasn't one in London, so we thought we would. It was very difficult because when you tried to raise money, everybody says, well, what about living people? Why are you worrying about dead animals? But I just said to them, well, you wouldn't be alive today if those animals hadn't given their lives for you, in the last century, quite honestly.
They were as much a part of the suffering as anybody else. It's Andrew Lansell. I'm stepping in for Pete Price, and I am thrilled, if not honoured, to have one of our nation's most beloved and best-selling authors, Jillie Cooper. And I say the word best-selling because, let's face it, it's happened again, hasn't it? Rupert's back.
And it's gone to number one for the second week running. So I'm very, very... I mean, it's interesting. It's Rupert's obviously done it, though, because, he's...
I think you might have had something to do with it, Jillie.
This is my hero, Rupert Campbell Black. And also, very excitingly, somebody's named a horse after him. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, really?
He ran at Goodwood the other day. You would laugh to yourself because this sweet horse came along. He's very young. He went in this race very, very quickly. He wasn't very quick, but to tell you very quickly. Anyway, he started off and did very well. And then he got obviously liked the scenery better because he lost by 67 lengths.
It's the taking part that counts. But let's talk about Rupert Campbell Black. I mean, we first met him in Riders.
Yes.
Which is how many years ago now?
83, 84.
And here he is, he's back again, and people are, are clamouring to find out what's going on. Where did he first come from? Where did he first spring from?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why I invented him, really, but I met, when I moved, we moved to Gloucestershire in 82, I met a lot of sort of very glamorous upper-class men, and they all became the base of it. One of them was Andrew Parker Bowles, and one of them, wait for it, was called the Earl of Suffolk and Berkshire. Don't you love that?
Yeah.
And they were all very glamorous, and I just thought, God, I must make a man like them, but they were very well behaved. It was my hero that was naughty.
I was standing can I say Waterstones? Am I allowed to say Waterstones? I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say. I was standing in Waterstones the other day, and two people, it is absolutely true, I was buying a new book by Andy Hamilton called The Star Witness. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And in front of me, and this is absolutely true, two ladies of a certain age had Mount in their hands.
Oh, good.
Now,
oh, good.
Did you think long and hard about the title?
No, I didn't. That wasn't my title. I had a title. It's about Rupert has a stallion called Love Rat. And when you have a stallion, the stallion of the year, the leading sire, is awarded because the stallion's progeny or foals win the most races worldwide or make the most money winning races.
Yeah.
And so Rupert is desperate to get Love Rat to the top of the leading star charts. And so he's tearing around London with the progeny, making them run races. And I wanted to call the book Leading Star. And my publisher's probably very sensibly said, no, no, nobody knows what a leading star is. We must call it Mount.
I believe you.
No, I never called it Mount.
So why did you think it was... did it just feel like it was right time to return to that that series?
Well, no. I've been writing it for 6 years. Mm. It took me 6 years to write. Writers took 15 years. Can you imagine the embarrassment of that? 6 years. And so this is... I think it's the 10th in the series called The Ratchet Chronicles.
Yeah.
It's all as Rupert's sort of... But I decided to make him centre stage again rather than sort of have a small part. And so and it seems to have... You know, and I love him and he does naughty things, but he is...
Well, I think you were going to say then it seems to have gone down well. It's gone down rather well, hasn't it? It's doing extremely well. It's flying high in the charts.
They might. It's not absolutely firmed up at all yet, but they might be going to make a films of them. So you could come and play him, couldn't you?
I don't think I'm posh enough. I think Pete Price could possibly do it, but I don't think I'm posh enough.
You're a very good actor. You could act anybody.
Oh well, thank you very much. Well, listen, I was so chuffed when I saw you. I mean, I told you on the night when I thought. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, one of the reasons why this happened is because your daughter, your stepdaughter, is working on the show. In The Sound of Music, we have these three sets of kids, six of them, and they are fabulous, and I'm so proud of them. And I'm sort of missing them already. You know, when we finish the show in 4 or 5 weeks, and Laura looks after them.
My stepdaughter, isn't she lovely?
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She's lovely, and it's a lovely job for her. She's always loved the theatre, and she loves working with all of you. And she tells me all the gossip about who's getting on with who, which is quite funny.
Yes, I'll admit actually, we do have quite a few chats before the start of Act Two to find out what's going on. Lovely. But one of the chats we had was about trying to get you to come on the show tonight, and I'm made up. You have, I mean, it's a very very special guest to have on, and you know, I'm really proud of your achievements.
Thank you. Well, and, you too, and you were marvellous as Mr. Bond, Captain Bondtrack. Christopher Plummer, who I met, you and Christopher Plummer.
Hang on, whoa, but backpedal. Where did you meet Christopher Plummer? This guy's one of my heroes.
I met him at a dinner party years and years ago, and he was very, very, very nice and very funny and not as glamorous as you, so there.
Yeah, but was he very pro Sound of Music then? Because he had a few years when he sort of wasn't too keen on talking about it and was a bit grumpy about it, by his own admission.
I think he was quite pleased with it. I mean, people are always quite pleased with it. I mean, he was, you know, because he was brilliant at that level. I think he was quite pleased, but I think it's now got some more gravitas now. I don't think people realise all the Nazi implications. It's a very, very serious story.
It's a very, very now, actually. And I've been thinking, actually, maybe when we do Wimbledon, we get you as a nun. And you could sort of hover in the background and fulfil another ambition, and then that could be the cause of your next novel.
I'd like to be a nun.
You'd like to be a nun?
Tell me something. Could there have been a man playing a nun in Cheltenham?
I'm not allowed to comment on such things. I couldn't possibly say that we have a large chorus and everybody gets involved. I'd get shot if we talked about that. Can't talk about that.
My daughter, as we were watching, said, "I'm sure that man, person on the right, is a man." So we got the giggles in the middle.
Well, people will have to come along and decide for themselves. So, listen, thank you for staying up so late and join us on the show tonight. Please come on again. I'm sure Pricey would love to have you on.
And well done. It was brilliant.
Well, huge congratulations on the return of Rupert and Mount. It's a huge buzz to see it flying out of the shops. And Christmas is coming, guys.
Yeah, it is.
Bless your heart, Julie.
Okay, done. Bye.
Bye-bye.